And a good morning to you. Thanks for being with us and welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys Golf Show is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the ball that is fit for you. By Kent Wool, the world's best sock. And by Seapalms Resort, where good things are happening. On the show, we're going to talk with Lily Braswell, operations manager at Wingfoot Golf Club, where the U.S. Open is being played next week. Lily will tell us what it takes for a club to hold a U.S. Open, especially amid the COVID situation. And then we'll talk with Jeff Crawford of Mizuno Golf with their new line of clubs, and now, as they introduced at the PGA Show this year, golf balls. And then we'll talk with former PGA Tour player Kyle Thompson, lives in Greenville, South Carolina, and talk to him about why he decided to quit the tour and go in a different direction in life. He won five times on the then web.com tour. But first up is Lily Braswell, operations manager at Wingfoot Golf Club. Good morning, Lily, and thanks for being with us on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you?
Very excited. Can't believe this is actually happening in a roller coaster of a year, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
So we're thrilled that it's here. And after all that hard work and trying to pivot from one plan to another, it's here.
Yeah, it is. Lily, how has the COVID situation during this pandemic altered your procedures and your setup?
For the Open has been a dramatic change. We were expecting around 40,000 spectators every day. We're going to be at about 2,000 between media and member volunteers and ground crew people. So it has really changed, number one, on the volume and the impact that it has on the golf course. As you know, Wingfoot doesn't have any land around us like other venues do. So all the structures go on the East Course. And with no fans, there's really very little impact on the East Golf Course, which is good news for us.
Yeah, and I know it's changed a lot of your setup, your procedures, and so on. But what is it like for Wingfoot to again have the U.S. Open there?
It's extremely exciting. It's going to be my first major there. I think New York, in particular, we need this. We need a great event, and,
yeah,
and we need to bring the spirit of New York back into play. Mamaroneck being so close to New Rochelle, that was the epicenter of COVID. There was so much uncertainty about everything.
Right.
And being able to not only host a major championship, but against all odds, it's very exciting.
Yeah, and it's also going to be a big difference as far as the tour players, the testing, the separation from everybody. Tell us a little bit about that so our audience can know a little bit more about all the extra things that you're going to have to do this year.
Yes, so the USGA has been a wonderful partner in this, and everybody that will be on property will or has been tested. I tested on Wednesday. It was a fantastic process. They did the results within 12 hours. So starting today, everybody that will be in the clubhouse in particular will be part of this bubble. And I call it, I say in particular because unlike other U.S. Opens, all our players will be taking over our entire clubhouse. So it's going to be a little bit different for them. Usually they have part of the clubhouse and a tent. Now they're taking the entire facility. So we need to be extremely cautious, for them and for us as well. But we're following all social distancing. Masks will have to be worn at all times. Washing hands, hand sanitizing, not sharing utensils. It's a big undertaking. It's one thing when you do it at home, for your family and try to keep everybody safe. It's a little different when you have 2,000 people coming through and making sure everybody's safe.
Yeah, that's for sure. And how long have you at Wingfoot and your staff and team and all the volunteers and maintenance folks been taking to get ready for this U.S. Open? When did you start?
So we started about 2 years ago. I think that's about right after Shinnecock is when the USGM team started coming to the property and working on the golf course, of course, and logistics. It's a big undertaking, and all those plans went straight into the garbage.
Yeah.
March 12th. So it and then it took a little while to wait and see what's going to happen. Right. And once New York started coming back and once Governor Cuomo approved the plan that the USGA and Wingfoot had proposed for the U.S. Open, that's when we started, okay, let's do this all over again. And it's been pretty much nonstop.
Yeah. And normally at a U.S. Open, any golf tournament, but especially a U.S. Open, there's a lot of merchandise that is bought. And that's another thing that's going to change. So now you're doing all that online. Can you give our listeners how they can get some U.S. Open merchandise?
Yes. So the USGA are the ones that sell the U.S. Open merchandise during the U.S. Open week.
Right.
And we do not have an online store, but if you go, there's several brands like Summit Brands and Johnny O that do have a licensing agreement with the USGA, and they're selling all their merchandise online. So definitely that's the best route.
All right. You say this is your first major at Wingfoot. There's an unbelievable amount of history at Wingfoot Golf Club. Did that make a difference to you when you took the job?
Believe it or not, I was not a golfer and not quite interested in golf at the time.
Okay.
And I always joke that that's the reason that they hired me, because they wanted to straighten the operation, in particular food and beverage and the clubhouse, and they figured we're going to hire somebody that wants nothing to do with golf so that she can focus on the job. But like everybody else, you know, I started being around it, and I started liking it. I started taking a couple lessons and learning about the history of Wingfoot and the history of golf.
Right.
And you know, I'm one of you now.
So you have the bug, so to speak, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So have you played the course recently and seen how high the rough is and maybe where you don't want to put the golf ball?
Yes, so as I mentioned, I'm a fairly new player, and I probably played about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And the advice that I got from one of our instructors at the club, she said, just keep it on the fairway. I'm like, oh, that sounds so easy.
Yeah, it sounds easy.
It was hard. It was tough to find the balls just when you knew exactly where they were, and
right.
You come over and where is it?
Yeah.
So I'm sure, you know, there was a big number of ball donations on my part that day. But it is tough. And I mentioned to the person I was playing with, it almost feels that when you're walking on sand, that it's heavy and like your legs are hurting that's obviously, has to do with the fact that he ended up on the rough a lot that day. But it's quite impressive.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And I've read some stories, and I follow a lot about golf and what's going on. And one, it's a shame that Brooks Koepka, due to an injury, is not going to be there. It's just a shame that he doesn't have a chance to come back, but he's been hurt most of this year anyway.
Yes, it's very disappointing, and we wish Brooks a speedy recovery and hopefully get back on the tour pretty soon.
But a lot of folks say Wingfoot is so hard that the winning score could be a plus number. And I've heard some numbers like between 5 and 8 over par may win the U.S. Open this year.
Well, we sure hope that it's a challenging course for them. I know our superintendent, Steve Rabbit, who has been working tirelessly during the last couple of years preparing this course, along with our West Course superintendent, Weston Neff. So I do hope that's the case.
Yeah, it's a very tough golf course. And one of the things, I think a couple of weeks ago in the playoffs, the players were talking about Olympia Fields and how high the rough was, and saying that they thought Wingfoot was going to be even tougher than what they had to deal with at Olympia Fields during the playoffs.
Yes, and let's not forget those greens.
Oh, yeah, the greens. The greens are, and the weather's going to be a factor. I mean, if it does rain or if it doesn't rain and the sun is beating down on those greens, and they're just going to be as hard as can be, and it's going to be very hard for the balls to stop and probably stop the putting. I mean, it's going to be pretty fast.
Yeah, it is. It's really challenging. I watched the USGA set up working on the 18th green yesterday, and they were there for a really long time and studying the undulations, and it's quite fascinating the amount of time that they put into setting up the course. So I know those greens are going to be challenging.
Were they challenging when you played it 3 weeks ago?
Yes, very.
Yeah, when you finally got to the green, right?
Finally got to the green on 18, and then it rolled back all the way to the fairway.
Oh, gosh. That's the interesting part about golf. That's the love and hate relationship. It's like, oh, I'm on the green. Oh, no, I'm not.
No, I know.
So what are your responsibilities during this U.S. Open as far as operations?
So I am overseeing, we have a member volunteer tent that is going to host about a little over 400 of our members. And that's part of the plan, by the way, presented to the governor, was that we are not going to be having volunteers coming from all over the country, all over the world, as it normally happens for a U.S. Open.
Okay.
It's all going to be locals, and the best way for us to recruit locals was recruit our own membership. And it also allows them, you know, the opportunity to be part of golf history. So we have a 400-plus person tent in our pool facility, so we're going to be supervising that. We're going to be supervising the scoring areas and the operation of the clubhouse, which is going to be holding, you know, hosting 144 of the best players in the world.
So yeah,
that's a pretty big deal for us. So we want to make sure they're all taken care of. And then operations in general, making sure logistically people are where they're supposed to be. The staff is where they're supposed to be. So it's a big week for us.
Yeah, it's kind of a little less as far as the people that would have attended, but it's kind of more because you got to worry about so much more with all the testing going on.
Absolutely, and like today is a big day for us. Today we open to the players, and we have to make sure that, you know, everybody that is there, staff, players, are following protocol. So it's going to be a little more work than we would have expected for the number of people.
Right.
But you know, it is what it is, and we're grateful that we're able to host this, and we're happy to have the players come in today and open our doors. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. U.S. Open always brings a lot to the TV. I'm sure that viewership will be extremely high. And Lily, thank you for taking the time. It was great to talk to you, and thanks for all that you're doing for the U.S. Open, and good luck.
My pleasure. My pleasure, and I hope you enjoy the U.S. Open next week, and let's see who takes the trophy home.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of people trying to guess about that. Thanks, Lily. Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay. That's Lily Braswell from Wingfoot, Charge of Operations, 400-plus volunteers. Normally, it would probably be triple that. No 40,000 fans. It's going to be an interesting, but it'll be a great TV on a very, very hard golf course with a lot of history. You might remember that in 2006 or 2004, one of those, Phil Mickelson made a double bogey on the last hole to lose to Jeff Ogilvie, who got a birdie on the hole before, and Colin Montgomery was also there and also got a double bogey, and some said he broke down in tears. I would break down probably on the first hole just because of where my ball ended up, if it even got off the tee. So we're going to come back with Jeff Crawford with Mizuno Golf, and then later Kyle Thompson, former PGA Tour player, on why he quit the PGA Tour, where he won 5 times, on theweb.com. We'll be back on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show right after these.
This is John Smoltz, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back. We're glad you're with us. I'm Rich Stiles. Mizuno Golf has been working with Keith Mitchell, who won the 2019 Honda Classic, and now Grayson Sigg, who will play in next week's U.S. Open at Wingfoot. And on the phone with us is Jeff Campbell of Mizuno Golf. Good morning, Jeff, and welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
All right. How about you?
Doing great.
Are you excited about your players in the U.S. Open next week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we wish we had a few more, but we're super excited to get Grayson in there. That's a huge surprise to get guys from the Korn Ferry Tour to qualify in there.
He's an unbelievable golfer. I followed him on the golf course a couple of times, and on a hole that I have a challenge to get, you know, at least a decent drive within 120 yards of the pin, he's going for the green. I mean, he just has an incredible swing speed.
Yeah, I met him briefly last November down at the RSM, and really nice guy, and, you know, watched him hit balls for a few minutes, and, you know, really just nice and simple swing. Doesn't look like anything can really go wrong with that swing.
No, it's amazing. He doesn't have anything going wrong, and I feel like I have everything going wrong. But and then you've also
the only thing he has going wrong for him is his timing. You know, this year, I mean, obviously he would have easily graduated to the PGA Tour, but
right.
You know, with everything going on, he's got to sit out one more year.
Yeah, well, but he'll be even more ready at that point because he'll mature a little bit, and I'm sure that'll help. But you've also got Keith Mitchell, who won the 2019 Honda Classic, and Keith has been, you know, not playing real well so far, but he does have a great swing.
Yeah, Keith's awesome. I've got to spend a decent amount of time with him, and you know, he's been a really important player for us, especially in the driver category. You know, he was the first player to put our ST190 driver in the bag last year, and that's what he was using when he won the Honda Classic. And then, you know, he had no issues going right into the new ST200. And so he's kind of been a trailblazer of sorts for us to get the driver more recognition out on the tour.
Yeah, but Mizuno over the years, I've been associated with Mizuno through Luke Donald.
Yeah, that's something that we love Luke. Luke's been tremendous for us to support us and be a brand ambassador. But, you know, we want to kind of shake that mold and not just be the Luke Donald brand. You know,
right.
Want to reach out and or branch out and get some other tour exposure and some different levels, you know, with like guys like Grayson Sigg and you know, see where we can grow this thing.
Yeah, we need some young players and get out there and just see kind of what's going on. So tell us, what is going on with Mizuno Golf? Tell us about your clubs.
Well, Mizuno's got a ton going on right now. You know, the pandemic has been a surprisingly, you know, large boost for the golf industry and us in particular. And so we're really excited for next Thursday to come. We're launching our new JPX 921 iron line, which consists of four right-handed models and then one specific left-handed model. And you've already got a couple sets out on tour and play. And the pre-orders have been massive. So we're really looking forward to getting those out and starting to ship them out to consumers to get in their hands.
All right, so tell me the difference as far as the kind of player that would use the 921 compared to the JPX or the MP clubs.
Well, the JPX is, you know, more of our technology line. We got a club basically for every player type, whereas in the MP line, it's always a little more geared towards the better player.
Okay.
So JPX, you know, spreads the handicap range a little bit more. You know, we got a club for anywhere from tour players to your better players. We got a club that's for more intermediate players, and we got a, you know, more forgiving game improvement iron as well.
And Jeff, how do you determine that, by swing speed or by their handicap or combination of both? But obviously what you want them to do is get a custom fit.
Exactly. I mean, custom fitting is a massive part of what we do. Roughly 80% of our golf club sales are custom clubs.
Okay.
So we rely on that heavily. But, you know, really, as far as determining which one's better for every type of player, it's all those things in the one. I mean, it's, you know, whatever's going to perform best for that player type. You know, sometimes a guy, you know, golf is such a funny game. You know, sometimes maybe a player that might need something more forgiving, they prefer the look of something a little smaller. So, you know, we have a couple models like that that still suit the eye but offer plenty of forgiveness. Because not everyone that needs forgiveness wants a really large golf club.
Right.
Then vice versa. I mean, some guys that are really good players want a little something a little bit larger to, especially maybe in the long irons, to help them, you know, maybe on certain shots. They're looking for a club that's on a short par four tee shot, or they want something. They have a particular hole of their club that they always find themselves a certain distance out, and they need that club to get them, get the ball up in the air a little bit better and just offer more forgiveness.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people, the more I'm around golf, the more I know that a lot of people like to see the look of the club. How does it feel? How does it look when I'm standing over it? And that, I was surprised at, that is so important to so many golfers.
It is. And I mean, to be honest, you can throw me in that category. I mean, I'm a pretty good ball striker, but, you know, there are times where I wonder if I would want a little bit more forgiving club, but then when I look at them, they don't look as good to me.
Right.
I like the look of something that's nice and clean and fairly compact, and that's just what I play better with.
Well, you've also, you've also introduced, as you said, a new driver that Keith is using. Grayson's going to use that, the ST200. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the ST200 line, I mean, we actually introduced it at the PGA show last January, and then they started shipping in March. And then obviously things kind of went off the rails. So we missed a lot of the buying season for that driver. But overall, it still has done really well. We did got some really good tour exposure. You know, from any given week, we were having 4 to 6 of them in play, which, you know, for Mizuno is a big deal. I mean, before Keith won the Honda Classic with our driver, we hadn't had a driver win on tour since the 2000 Masters. So Wow. We went on a 19-year drought.
Wow.
Now to consistently get 4 to 6 of them in play every week on the tour was a big deal. And they were really well received at retail. I mean, like I said, sell through has been nice. Would have been nicer to have the bulk of the spring season to sell it.
Sure.
With retailers were closed though, but you know, we got something up our sleeves coming for early next year. So we're going to continue, you know, building the driver line and building our name in that category.
And you've also started to build a name not only in your irons, which has always been, a good step for you guys, and now the drivers, but also putters. Tell us about the M-Craft series.
The M-Craft series has been phenomenal. It's, it's been a huge surprise. Honestly, we haven't had a putter in the U.S. market since 2009 when we had a series with Bettinardi. But we haven't had just a true Mizuno-only putter
right. In
a really long time here in the U.S. market. So people are really excited to see it. They've seen some models over in Europe and Japan and wanted to know when it was going to happen here. And so we finally came out with a model that, you know, that we wanted to offer here. So it's, it's three pretty basic head shapes. We don't want to go too crazy with the initial launch, but
right. We
offer three each head style. Comes in three finishes. And, really classic finishes of, a slant neck blade, a true blade, and then a kind of a smaller half mallet. And, selling was tremendous. Once our reps started showing it to retailers, I mean, we had to scramble to order more.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, we exceeded our forecast by, I'm not going to throw out numbers, but let's just say it was a lot.
Yeah. And then now you're offering golf balls, which has not been part of the Mizuno line for so long. And now you've got two different brands of golf balls.
That's true. Yeah. Sort of just like the putters, golf balls have been available in Europe and in the Asian markets for many years, but we just never had them here.
Right.
And they finally were going to come out with a ball that we felt was worthy of bringing to this market, because it's such a tough market over here. I mean, there's so many good brands, so many loyal brands, or longtime brands that people are loyal to.
Sure.
The golf ball market. And so it's a tough one to break into, but we knew there was a core group of Mizuno fans that wanted that and wanted to be able to try it. And so we brought over the RB Tour last spring, and then this spring we introduced the RB 566 and 566B. And those have been really, both balls were really well received right out of the gate. 566 sales have been really steady, especially with more people getting into golf. They're, not everyone's looking for a, $40 or more tour level golf ball.
Sure.
So that's where the RB 566 has come into play, and we're chasing inventory in those right now. So that's, a good and a bad thing combined into one.
Yeah. You want people to want them, but you also want to be able for them to get them.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's, with the Asian markets right now where everything's produced, it's, a lot of people are battling some supply chain issues, and luckily it hasn't hit us too hard.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, just before we leave, give us your website so our listeners can go to it and check out all that Mizuno has to offer, not only in golf, but all the other sports that you work with.
Absolutely. Well, we actually, for that purpose, we actually use two websites. So the golf website, we updated it back in the spring to merge with our European team, so it's all in one. So it's called MizunoGolf.com.
Easy.
And then if you want to check out some of the other products that we offer here in the U.S., like baseball, softball, running, volleyball, training gear, you can check out MizunoUSA.com.
That's great. I love the tagline, reach beyond.
That's right.
That describes my golf game. I reach beyond, but I won't tell you the other part of that. Well, Jeff, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Let me ask you this before we go. Do you think there is going to be a PGA show in Orlando in January? And if so, will you guys be there?
Well, I mean, so what I'm hearing lately is that they're still shooting to have some type of show. It's going to be much different than what it has been. Doesn't sound like manufacturers are going to have the opportunity to bring their own booth. It's going to be sort of a a miniature version of that. Like I think I read, well, the biggest space anyone will be able to have is only like 1,500 square feet.
Oh wow!
And there's going to be a lot of scaled down stuff, potential virtual stuff, which I'm not real sure how that works.
Yeah.
And then maybe some extended days for outdoor demo days, maybe like an extra day there. So we're still waiting and seeing the how it's all going to play out. We're not fully committed either way yet.
Right.
We've been the last 2 years, and it's been a really nice success for us. So we certainly believe in the PGA show and want to support it, but
right.
It is a big expense to go, so it's got to be worth it. We're waiting to see what the final plans are going to be before we fully commit either way.
Yeah, totally understand that. I'm also trying to decide whether or not to go. I've been, several years in a row, and it's just with all these changes going on, it'll take a little while, but I'm sure we'll get what the final details are going to be.
Yeah, I hope to hear that soon, because we need to, start making plans either way.
Yeah, that's very true. Jeff, thank you for being with us. We appreciate your time, and thanks for telling us about Mizuno Golf.
Anytime.
Appreciate it. Jeff Crawford with Mizuno Golf, and Keith Mitchell, Grayson Sigg, Luke Donald all play the club, and they're going to be in the U.S. Open next week. And if you're thinking about something that you would like to have today, you could have it starting at 4:30 at CJ's Italian Restaurant. Check out their full menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com, and you know that they are known for their deep dish. But their thin crust pizza and their cauliflower crust is unbelievable. It only comes in medium, but it's great. So check out everything at CJ's, their pizzas, their calzones, their subs, their salads. Everything is made fresh every day, and they're working on that actually right now. So check out their full menu. They make it easy. Call up, give them your name, give them your order. Pull up in front of the store. They come out, get your name. They go back in and get your order, bring it. It is that easy. Touch free at CJ's Italian Restaurant. Check out their menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com.
This is Brandon Yeomans, Director of Club Operations at Sea Palms Resort, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys on ESPN Coastal Radio.
And welcome back. We appreciate you being with us. Our next guest played on the PGA Tour for 18 years and the Web.com Tour when it was called that. He won 5 times on the Web.com, 3 times in 1 tournament in North Carolina. Then he quit the tour. Kyle Thompson is with us. Good morning, Kyle, and thank you for being with us on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing today?
We are doing wonderful. We want to thank you for being with us. But the first question I got to ask you is, how hard was it to come up with this decision to quit playing professional golf?
It was actually pretty easy, to be honest with you. I did it a long time, but I've got a young family that are now 11, 9, and 4. And so it was just time for me to make a transition into something a little more stable. You know, the golf world, I would say, I tell people it's really glamorous or it's really not. So there's really two sides to the business. You're either flying private jets everywhere or you're sleeping in your car. And I wasn't sleeping in my car, but I wasn't exactly close to flying in jets. But
yeah.
It was a great experience that I had the first, part of my working life, and transitioned into a new career that I'm really enjoying. And everything in my life is good right now. I couldn't be happier.
Well, you won 5 times on what was then the Web.com Tour. In fact, you actually won 3 times at a place that I was on the board at the Rex Hospital Open. And I saw you win up there twice before we moved. And you won up there 3 times. Was it something special about the TPC course that you like, that fits your game and fits your eye?
that was the TPC Wakefield up in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yep.
I it's hard to explain why I played well there all the time, but the greens were always super, super pure. Some of the fastest greens we putted on all year.
Yes.
And I really liked that. And the course itself, it didn't really suit a bomber. I was never like one of the longest hitters, but I was a pretty accurate driver of the ball. And so, yeah, just something about the place just always fit my eye. There's a lot of fades you need to play off the tees, and it really rewards good wedge play, which is something I usually do pretty decently. And so, yeah, it was, I don't know, it's just kind of a weird thing. I mean, my third win, I won it in 7, 11, and 15. And my third win, you know, that was my last event that I was going to play in. I actually had like a professional resume made up the week before.
Oh, wow.
To go look for a real job, be honest with you. And I, out of the blue, it was my last event that I was going to get into in my career. Only reason I got into it is because I won in 2011. And so out of the blue that week, I think I shot 61 in a practice round playing a little money game with Tommy Two Gloves and some other guys. And it just kind of kept going throughout the week and played some really, really good golf and, you know, had my career back. Pretty wild.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I know Tommy and I know, you know, some of the other guys that have gone from the web.com, now the Korn Ferry, to the PGA Tour and then back. And is it tough going from the web.com Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour and then not doing very well and knowing that you have to go back? Does that feel defeated to you, or did it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it's not a big deal early in your career, but I was 38 or 9 when I
right.
had to pull the plug on it. And, you know, you just, how much is your time worth away from home?
Yeah.
You know? And by the time you spend 40, 50 grand traveling and, you know, you're paying your caddy and all those things, I mean, just to kind of break even for me, I had to make around 135 to 150,000 on the course on the web tour.
Right.
You know, with expenses and sponsorship money, all that sort of stuff. So it just got to be where, you know, after a while, it didn't make sense from a business standpoint to keep going, you know. And yeah, I had a blast doing it, but I'm having more fun being home now and feeling like a, you know, really feeling like a normal human being compared to somebody that's living out of a suitcase for 25 weeks a year.
Yeah. Kyle, I know that when you play on the mini tours and when you play on the PGA Tour, the endorsement deals are different, but how much different are they?
Significantly. You know, depending on where you are in your career, if you're early on in your career, then you're going to get paid a lot more because I think you could be the next big thing, you know,
right.
on the PGA Tour. But,
right.
you know, the PGA Tour money on average, I would say a minimum, you're making 150 grand a year in endorsements, very minimum. Up to, you know, obviously, you can't even put Tiger and Phil in the mix, but
no.
up to probably 3 to 4 million a year on some of those guys.
Right.
And then, you know, going down to the Korn Ferry Web Tour, whatever you call it, it's probably more in the range of 20 to 45, 50 thousand for the average guy.
Okay.
So, you know, it's pretty significant. You know, and then and if you're not on that tour, you're not getting any sponsor money other than your parents and your parents' friends. You know?
Which you hope you have a lot of friends of your parents.
Yeah, yeah. When you're young and you're trying to get your career going, I mean, it's really difficult because it's a very expensive career to chase down.
Yeah.
You know, unless you get off the hot start early on and you make some money and you can kind of parlay that into, you know, cause sort of what I did. When I first turned pro in 2001, I had some members of my club. They put about $8,500 or so together and handed it to me, and I parlayed that into a career. I played well the next year, made 40 or 50 thousand, just, you know, living out of my car, basically chasing Monday qualifiers and
yeah.
doing mini tour events. And then I got my web status the following year, and I had back to back, I think $175,000 a year, you know, sort of years, where I finished 25th, 22nd on a money list. But that was back when it was top 20 got their card. But
right, right.
You know, for a kid that was 20. I think I was 22 or 3 right out of school, 175 grand, you know, plus my endorsement money. I mean, I felt like the richest guy on earth. So, you know, I was spending 250 bucks a month living with a college teammate of mine. So,
right.
Yeah, you know, but obviously things change, and with a family and all the responsibilities that come along with that, it just, you know, it just didn't make sense for me to keep going. But I still enjoy the game. I love watching these young guys play. I mean, it's a totally different game now than it was
when I first came out.
Do you still
The average age now on the Korn Ferry Tour is it's got to be in probably 26 or 7.
Right.
And when I first started, it was probably closer to 37, 38, maybe even 40.
Okay.
You know, so it's just changed. The dynamics have changed because, you know, you used to have Q school, so there was a reason for guys to keep hanging on and keep trying to chase it. Because you always had that end of the year opportunity. If you didn't get your car through Korn Ferry, you had one more shot at getting your car through Q school. But that's changed now, and now you have to play a full year to reap the rewards of it to get back up to the PGA Tour.
Right.
And so I think a lot of veteran players, sort of like myself, just decided, you know, hey, I'm done with this.
Yeah. I have a friend down here, Paul Claxton, played on the Web.com Korn Ferry Tour for quite a long time. I think he's pretty close to being in the top five as far as money winnings on the mini tour. Great guy, great golfer, now having some success as he is now playing as a PGA professional on some of the tours. Did you know him, and did you – you probably did because I'm sure you ran across him a lot.
Great. I knew PC very, very well.
Yeah, great guy.
He would always – after every round, he'd sit there and hit chip shots. And he'd say to me, he'd say to anybody, listen, chip in a sleeve before you can leave. And he'd sit there and just keep chipping until he chipped in three shots. But I've known Paul forever.
Yeah.
I think he's number three on the all-time money list on the Korn Ferry behind. I'm number two, and another guy out of North Carolina, Darren Stiles, is number one on the money list. He's got me by about 100 grand or 200 grand or so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice list to be on. But tell me, Kyle, what you had success on the web.com then. What happened when you went up to the PGA Tour? I mean, I saw that you missed some cuts. Was it a confidence thing, or was it just such a separation from talent from one tour to the next?
I definitely don't think it was a separation of talent, because there's plenty of guys that honestly that struggle on the web tour and do great up there. For me personally, I had some big issues with the yips. Yeah, it really killed my career, honestly. My putting, I was always a really solid ball striker, but my putting was just so sporadic. And so once that kind of got out of whack, it really hit me 2012, putted awful, and I just fought it through the rest of my career. And went to a claw stroke, and it got a little better at times, but it was something that just was always in the back of my mind. And for some reason, when I got on the PGA Tour, maybe it's just a little bit of the bigger, the bigger scene and putting more pressure on myself needed to. I really struggle with it. But, you know, definitely some confidence. It's tough when you go from Korn Ferry, where you're getting the premier tee times every week, to, you know, going out to the PGA Tour and you're in the last group and you're finishing a dark and you're playing with Monday qualifiers and, you know, PGA section guys. Not to knock any of those guys, but it's not as comfortable as you're used to when you're moving up. So, but you know, everybody has to do it. That's just something that I struggled with. And, it's hard to account why I did so well on one tour and so bad on the other, but that's kind of life, you know. I can't do anything about it now.
I hear about that. All right. We're going to have to take a break, Kyle. We'll be right back with Kyle Thompson on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, this is John Wade, Director of Golf at Ocean Forest Golf Club, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're on the phone with Kyle Thompson, formerly of the PGA and Web.com Tour. Kyle, one of the things I wanted to ask you just before we went to a break, but how much of the game, in your opinion, is mental?
You know, it changes as you get better at the game. You know,
okay.
I feel like when you're kind of a beginner, it's not that mental. You're physically trying to figure out how to make impact, how to control the club face. As you get more advanced and better at the game, it becomes more and more mental. And, you know, it's definitely something that I see a lot of really good golfers, they don't spend enough time on their mental game, to be honest with you. You know, you look at if you go walking up and down the range of a college event or a mini tour event, everybody has awesome looking golf swings. They all hit it great. But how come one guy plays so much better than the other? I think it's a lot of it's because of how they think. And, you know, and something that I notice is that
rarely do you see, I mean, you might see a guy on the range for 6 hours, but rarely does that same guy spend any time on his mental game. So when I'm, you know, sort of mentoring some of the younger guys that I've met along the way, and I try to really encourage them to spend a lot of time working on how they think, what they're thinking about, you know, envisioning themselves doing great things in a game.
Right. And so how do you improve your mental aspect if the mental aspect is getting in the way of you playing what you know you have the talent for?
So one thing that there's a book called With Winning in Mind by a guy named Lanny Bassem. I never shared it with anybody when I was competing because I thought it was so good. But it's a game about just, performance-based. And he was one of the world's best shooters back in the 70s. And he created this book after interviewing hundreds of other high-performing athletes. And I used it a lot in my last few years of my career. I kind of got away from it in 2018 on the PGA Tour and got kind of, mistakenly, I wish I would have stuck to the principles in this book, but it really helped me a lot in the last 4 or 5 years of my career. And it just, you know, a big part of becoming better and stronger mentally is just constantly feeding yourself positive stuff.
Right.
Like I used to put, you know, on my mirror, on my refrigerator, in my car, I would have goals written out. I would have what they call a directive affirmation, just saying, I would say it's kind of cheesy sounding, but it would say something along the lines of, I'm one of the best putters in the world. I make everything, something stupid like that. Well,
right.
The more you see that, and the more you read it, the better chances you have of becoming that.
Yeah. And I know sometimes when I go to the golf course, there are some days when I feel like I see the breaks in the putts and I've got the speed down and I feel like I know I can get this close. Maybe it'll go in. But there's other days when I'm saying, like, I can't read which way this thing is going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I challenge you and your listeners, next time you're out playing and you're struggling with, you know, missing short putts or something like that, you know, try less. You know, obviously you want to make it, but the better you can be at not really caring about the results,
right,
the better off you'll be. And
yeah.
So, you know, when you walk into a putt, say to yourself, I don't care where this goes, or just smooth stroke. I mean, it's very anti sort of the way you feel like you should be thinking. You feel like you should really get in there and try hard and grind.
Right.
But that just doesn't work.
So, yeah.
I know from experience.
is teaching or mentoring some of these players or possibly an agent, is that something that may be in the future for Kyle Thompson?
No, not at all. I'm working for a company called Gallagher, Arthur J. Gallagher. We're the world's third largest insurance brokerage, and I'm handling property and casualty placements for them.
Okay.
And I love my new career, but I do like helping people no matter what it is. And I do occasionally give some lessons. I'm actually helping two girls that are, one's at UNC Asheville, and her younger sister's going to be heading there next year. I've been helping some juniors. I really like, you know, players that are passionate about the game.
Okay.
But, I just try to give them some tidbits that I learned over my career. I really try not to help too much with technical stuff and try to keep it more mental, more routine-based.
Right.
Tips.
And how important is a pre-shot routine? We've got about a minute left.
It's very important. I mean, if you took your stops, your phone out, and you put a stopwatch on Tiger Woods, he hits that number within a quarter second every single time.
Right.
And so if when you're, you know, if one putt you're looking at it four times, you're looking at the hole, and another time you're looking at it once, you need to work on your routine.
Right.
And our college coach used to make us write down a routine so he could sit there and look at it and know if we're on track or not. So I think that's something for everybody that you guys could all take away from it.
Can you change your routine?
Oh, yeah. You
okay.
In
okay.
the round?
Yeah.
I would rather stick with the routine throughout the round. That's the one you brought.
Okay.
I dance with it all day.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for dancing with us for the last few minutes. We appreciate your time. I know your family loves having you home, and I know you too as well. So thanks, Kyle, very much for your time today.
Sure, Rich.
Take care. Kyle Thompson, formerly on the PGA Tour, won 5 times on the web.com tour and is now in the insurance business in Greenville, South Carolina. We want to thank him, Jeff Crawford from Mizuno Golf, and Lily Braswell from Wingfoot. So watch the U.S. Open. Listen to us here, the Back Nine Boys, every Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 9 on ESPNCoastal.com.